Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Tuesday, May 26th. I'm Olivia Rose. The Petersburg Community Foundation's endowment fund has reached $1 million. The million-dollar investment milestone means the fund will grow more money for the foundation, which distributes grants to local organizations, programs, and projects every year. Board member Sue Paulson led a celebratory toast at a foundation event during Petersburg's Little Norway Festival weekend.
Congratulations and full speed ahead. Skål, everybody! Skål!
She credited the achievement to the, quote, unrelenting and frequent donations raised in Petersburg. This spring, the foundation is awarding the highest dollar amount of grants that it ever has, nearly $50,000. 9 awards were announced at the event. The Petersburg Children's Center received $5,500 from the foundation, which First Bank matched for a total of $11,000. It's the highest total award to a single recipient this cycle. The money is for various childcare supplies at the facility and upgrading its camera system. Charlay Mamoe is the Children's Center's director. She said they try not to apply for money, quote, unless we absolutely need it.
I always tell my staff, you know, shoot for the moon, and if you land in the stars, it's okay. So whenever I got told that we were fully funded by both organizations, I literally cried. I was like, thank you so much for the support of everybody in this room. It definitely takes a village to raise our youngest citizens, and I'm happy to be a part of your village, so thank you.
The local Salvation Army was awarded $5,000 by the foundation. That grant funding was matched by the Alaska Community Foundation's Nourish Communities Fund, amounting to a total of $10,000. The money supports the Salvation Army's food box program it provides during the holidays. Local Salvation Army representative Captain Ashley Duran says this support for the food box program helps support families experiencing food insecurity in the community.
Last year, we had some people that were coming in last minute crying because they didn't know where they were going to get food. And with the shutdowns that were happening, they came to us and we were able to provide Christmas meal for them. And there was a lot of single moms crying when they received that meal. So thank you for this.
The Petersburg Community Foundation also contributed $2,500 towards repairing the gutters at Petersburg's historic Sons of Norway Hall building, awarded $6,000 to the Claussen Memorial Museum for a new roof, granted the Five Finger Lighthouse Society $2,400 for installing cameras at the island, and awarded KFSK $7,500 for replacing a piece of antenna equipment. The Petersburg Public Library received $4,000 for a self-service checkout kiosk. The Muskeg Malariers Rose Mulling Club received $2,250 to support travel costs for a visiting class instructor. And the Petersburg Indian Association received $1,700 for safety supplies for the canoe journey to Juneau for celebration. The foundation also recognized Petersburg resident Desi Burrell as this year's community volunteer. As part of the award, Burrell got to choose a nonprofit organization to give a $1,000 grant. Burrell chose Beat the Odds, which supports local cancer-related programs. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly last week voted to terminate the library funding agreement with the city. As KRBD's Sydney Dauphiné reports, that means many people across the island may lose library access if they can't come to a new agreement by the end of the year.
Residents across the borough have access to city library services, but people outside city limits have to pay additional property taxes for it. That money goes to the city, which owns and operates the library. Some people are speaking out against paying higher property taxes for city services despite living outside city limits. The costs to run Ketchikan City Library are higher than ever. Library Director Pat Tolley said they're asking the borough for more money than previous years because of rising costs.
The library's mission has not changed. How we fulfill that mission is changing and must continue to do so in order to meet the needs and interests of the residents of Ketchikan.
The borough has been making annual payments to the city library for over 40 years through a funding agreement. In exchange for those payments, the library is obligated to provide library services for people across the island. The payment amounts change and are based on population estimates and budget appropriations. The amount of borough contribution is calculated based on the population of non-city residents. Now, the borough would have to increase property taxes for people outside city limits in order to afford its contribution under this agreement. At an assembly meeting earlier this month, a handful of people spoke in favor of terminating the agreement. They prefaced that they were not against the library, but against how non-city residents are taxed to fund it. Eric Simon, who lives south of town, told the assembly that everyone needs a seat at the table when it comes to library funding. He said non-city residents have no say in the library budget and believes a renegotiation could improve the process.
I am not for defunding the library, but I do want a say in how my property tax money is spent, and I am asking that you use every tool available to renegotiate before increasing our taxes.
Another person who spoke in favor of the agreement termination said she's on a fixed income and is worried additional taxes will drive her out of Ketchikan. Nearly 20 people took to the podium during the citizen comment period of the meeting. Most of them wanted to keep the funding agreement as is.
The library is not a luxury. It's critical infrastructure.
That's homeschool educator Serge Baliff speaking to the assembly. He said with two schools closing in the district, some families may resort to homeschooling options. He said the library is critical to those families.
Many families are struggling to afford food, rent, and health care. But that's precisely why the library matters so much. It's free to those families. It's one of the only true free resources we offer every resident inside the city and out.
Baliff also said the library is part of what brought him to Ketchikan. Others who spoke against the agreement termination highlighted the library's programming and services, array of book options, and the need for taxes to fund services. At a meeting later this month, Assemblymember Jamie Palmer said she doesn't want to defund the library, but she does want to take a closer look at the agreement.
All good things need reflection and scrutiny, and it's time. And we're not saying we're not funding the library. There's nothing in the text that says that. It's just coming to the table and reworking our agreement and giving staff the opportunity to negotiate.
The agreement hasn't been renegotiated since 2018. Most of the library budget goes towards personnel costs. Assemblymember Kathy Bowling said, if people are cut, services are cut. And now isn't the time to mess with a system that works.
So why, at a time when our schools are just bare bones, that we are going to imperil another institution? I don't see the advantage of it.
The vote to renegotiate library funding comes just days after Ketchikan's school board approved a budget with deep cuts to library services, leaving only one district librarian. Librarians across the community have argued at public meetings that neither city libraries or school libraries will be able to function without proper staff. The assembly approved to terminate the agreement with the city with a vote of 5-2. The assembly directed borough staff to research alternatives and provide analysis of the agreement before the end of the fiscal year, or July 1st. The agreement will be terminated at the end of this year. If they don't come to a new agreement, people living outside city limits may lose access to library services. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Sydney Dauphiné.
The Alaska Department of Law has voided regulations aimed at restricting the Area M commercial salmon fishery. The regulations were passed by the State Board of Fisheries in February and quickly challenged in a lawsuit filed by the Aleutians East Borough, the native village of Unga, and two commercial fishing groups. They argued the regulations couldn't be enforced because the Board of Fisheries violated state ethics laws while adopting them. The groups dropped the lawsuit last Wednesday after the state revoked the new rules, with both sides agreeing to end the case. Area M has long been at the center of a fight over salmon conservation in western Alaska, where low chum and chinook returns have led to major restrictions on subsistence fishing. The five regulations approved by board members at their February meeting would have reduced when and where commercial salmon harvesters could fish in the South Alaska Peninsula, commonly called Area M. they would also have added closures tied to Chinook salmon harvests. The borough and other plaintiffs, including the native village of Unga, argued that some of the board's votes were invalid due to undisclosed conflicts of interest and that some of the board members should not have participated in the vote. The issue has divided fishing groups across Alaska for decades. Subsistence harvesters in western Alaska, most notably native communities in the Yukon-Kuskokwim region, have raised alarm over dismal salmon returns. They say the intercept fishery in Area M has contributed to poor returns in the region and led to closures that threaten their entire way of life. Area M fishermen and local officials say the restrictions would hurt fishing communities without doing much to help salmon returns. In a statement last week, the borough called the state's action a complete victory. Sixth graders at Juneau School Montessori Borealis recently showcased their family histories with presentations they've spent months working on. It's a capstone project for the grade level, and the presentations parallel Southeast Alaska's history, too. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports.
Parents and siblings line up in the hallway outside the Zonta Kahini campus gym, waiting to see the culmination of their sixth graders' hard work. Teacher Corey Crossett holds the door open. He helps to lead this project, and he says it was already a tradition when he started 20 years ago.
I think one of the things that Montessori emphasized was that people came before us, and we need to remember that we stand on their shoulders and their accomplishments, and I think that ultimately we want children to wonder what their own contribution might be.
Each student outlined the life story of a person in three different generations of their family. They made a migration map, a family tree, and brought in artifacts from their family stories. They had 10 minutes to present everything they've learned and read a memoir, a story from their own lives that taught them something. As soon as Crossett starts the timer, the students began racing back through time.
Good evening. My name is Jameson Danner, and I would like to thank you all for coming.
Jameson Danner stands up in front of his poster board, which features three timelines printed on piano keys, a Sambagita flower, and a plane propeller. The last one is for his great-grandpa.
During World War II, he worked at the he was an aeronautical engineer and worked with the Consolidated Aircraft Corporation.
He holds up a small model plane.
And this is a B-24 Liberator, which is the type of plane that he worked on.
His great-grandpa grew up in Juneau. At age 14, he and his family raised an orphan black bear cub on their homestead. Danner's family migration map is bright and colorful and far-flung, with lines from the Philippines and all over Europe to Juneau, and then shooting back out down the West Coast.
After moving to Juneau, my family spread out, kind of like a firework going off.
His grandmother's life story is printed on a rotating wheel behind the big flower. Turning the wheel allows one moment in the timeline to peek between the petals at a time.
So the flower is the national flower of the Philippines, and also she really loved gardening.
His grandmother died in 2024. Below the Sampaguita flower is a government document with her name and face on it, another family artifact.
This right here is her naturalization certificate from when she moved from the Philippines to the U.S.
Across the gym floor, sixth grader Taylor Kubik starts with her mom's life story. It's full of ups and downs.
One thing that I didn't know is that in 1993, her grandfather actually got in a logging accident and was sadly killed. And in 2003, she was the first middle school girl to join hockey in Alaska, or in Juneau, sorry, and she made the newspaper. And in 2006, she was hungry and was in Walmart and stole popcorn chicken. And in 2014, biggest life-changing event, I was born.
Then she goes back about 70 years in time to her great-grandmother's story, which intersects with Southeast Alaska's history.
In 1944, when she was only 5 months old, the town that she lived in burnt down, Puna, Alaska, and they had to rebuild the whole town.
Kubik shows some of her artifacts.
Over here, we have a regalia. I didn't bring the real one with all the stuff on it because I didn't want it to break or anything. And here is a rattle, Raven. I danced with this at celebration.
She ends with her memoir, which was about her switching schools and being nervous about the change.
I looked around and was taking all of this in. It felt very peaceful, not too loud and not too quiet. The sun was shining and there was no clouds in sight. The air was cold on my skin. There was a slight breeze. I didn't know I was looking at my future best friends.
And the rest is history. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.